This episode of Pomcast is sponsored by Wool & Flower, a small craft-based company based in Glasgow, Scotland.
Wool & Flower evolved out of various craft interests in Australia and brings together wool, plants and pattern.
As well as reclaimed tweed pouches and colourwork knits, their focus is on naturally dyed yarns in small batch, one-off colourways, inspired by and sourced from the natural landscape of Scotland.
Wool & Flower incorporates a variety of different bases, from woolly, bouncy native Shetland, perfect for colourwork and cosy garments, and luxury fine-gauge blends that held together work beautifully to form complex textures and subtle colours.
Wool & Flower can be found at woolandflower.com and at yarn festivals around the UK and Europe.
And welcome to Pomcast, the podcast brought to you by Pom Pom Quarterly. I'm Lydia Gluck, and I'm here with not just Sophie Scott.
Hey, also we have Juju Vale.
Hi!
Yay! So you heard Juju on, well, you've heard her on many podcasts, but on the previous one, which was recorded at Pomcast Live.
You've also been a guest host with me at points.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Wow.
I just met Pomcast Memories, and you were our first interviewee.
I was. I rambled on for like 3 hours, I think.
That was great. Really good fun.
Yeah.
Yes, but now we have you here as co-host, I guess.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, we like having you here anyway, just because it's great, but also because you guest edited Pom Pom issue 22.
I did. It was so fun.
It was so fun, and it looks pretty great.
Yeah.
I was just saying, we were looking at it again, and I was like, this is very nice.
That was reassuring. So the theme of this issue, this podcast, sorry, is Juju and issue 22, I guess.
Which rhymes, so that's good.
Yay!
Juju.
Issue 22.
Oh, yeah.
And also, the tutu, I just thought with the Juju, like,
ooh.
Like two.
Oh, yeah, because you made my, you gave me the... The
Jew
logo
squared.
Idea of Jew squared. Yeah, J-U squared, because my name is spelled J-U, J-U.
Yeah. Just for clarity there.
Yeah.
The many layers.
So, yeah, that's right.
Well, wonderful. We should probably catch up with a little bit of news. Now that's the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
News, PomFest happened.
Yes.
You probably caught up with the PomFest recording we did, Pomcast Live. I think it goes without saying we say thanks again for all the peoples who came.
All the peoples who came and did helping. Some people did both of those things. and everybody who's involved kind of behind the scenes beforehand, and our lovely sponsors, and of course, Pomcast Live folks.
So much fun. I really had a great time.
You might have noticed.
There's so much you in the background. Like,
yeah!
You're like, woo!
I had a little bit to drink, I think. But I really enjoyed that. I want to do that every month. I think we should do our touring pom, you know, knitting themed pub quiz every month.
Hey,
would be
just we're right waiting for the bookings
me.
To roll in.
Yeah, and, come on now, babies.
Yeah.
You know you need
those
us.
Those of you who run, I don't know what, like community centers all over the world.
In North America, it would be like Legion centers. Do you know what those are?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're always like there's no windows in them because nobody's allowed to see the legions, and they still smell of smoke. You know, after all these years.
So that's what we're looking for, guys. That's what we're aiming for.
We're branching out into another project now.
But yeah, it was really, really fun.
But you guys, you'd give up the magazine, wouldn't you, to do that? I mean, you would, wouldn't
whoa.
You?
Whoa.
This is a discussion not for recording. Okay. Like.
But yeah, people who couldn't make it to Pomcast Live, but would like to see such a thing, where do you live? Australia? Great. How many of you are there? Can we come?
Great. Would yeah, you? Okay, I'm actually thinking
it could be like my dad wrote a porno. Let's
that's
just go.
Thinking, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think, you know, there needs to be more knitting-themed entertainment.
Like, right. You know, that's what we did, essentially.
Yeah.
We made fun of people who didn't knit. That was amusing.
That was very amusing.
I still keep laughing about my dad just saying, pardon?
That was good. Yeah.
After the first question, that was good. And your sister gave some excellent answers.
Oh, she's good.
She's good comedy
she's
value.
Good. I mean, I'm biased, but she's good.
Kate Scott. Anyway.
Oh, we should say, if you missed out, not only can you listen, you can buy like loads of fun merchandise now in the pom-pom
so
shop.
Much fun merchandise.
Really cool enamel badges and tote bags and pouches.
And the show guide.
And the show guide. Oh,
cool
boy.
Cool games on the back of it, as well as a very cool guide to craft and knitting related things in Northeast London by Animots, which I have yet to go to all those places.
That's why you need the guide.
That's why you need the guide.
All the information. So that's pompommag.com/shop. where you can also buy the magazine. Who'd have thunk it? So Juju, issue 22, that's in the shops.
Yes.
Really full of a lot of pattern and texture, isn't it?
Yeah, that's so. Right. That's true. That was what I was going for, is I love pattern and I love color. But I mean, I think probably almost every issue of Pom Pom celebrates lots of color.
Halfway through 16.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I said almost. Every, otherwise, I would have said every
I just
issue.
Had to prove the
exceptional the rule.
Petition there.
I love pattern on pattern. So I love the idea that you have a, you know, patterned jumper, but you're also wearing other patterned things and they're all clashing vigorously together. Me so too. Even in the solid sweater, which is called
Ellie Belinda,
I wanted to sort of, you know, it has got a texture and it doesn't show up so well in the pictures, but the skirts each had like a little texture to them, and of course patterned tights. I love patterned tights, and if I was wearing it, probably I would, you know, or many of us would wear like a patterned, like colorful scarf and things with it too. It's just that obviously we don't want to layer too many knits in a photograph in the magazine, because then you don't know what the pattern's for.
Yeah.
But the, in reality, you know, you go to any knitting place and you see knits with knits, don't you?
It's true. That's one thing I like about knitting/crafty people in general, is the amount of playful colour and pattern and so on.
Mm.
Sometimes fashion-y things can get a bit like, it's a bit too minimal for my
Well, yeah, the whole that taste. Whole decade of, well, it was more than a decade, but you know, artistic directors just wearing black and stylists wearing black and everything, and you know, because they want to like be a clean palette for what they're dressing. Crafty people aren't like that so much, are they?
No,
I'm wearing black, but I was grumpy this morning, that's why I put on this.
You have a little check on your trousers.
Oh yeah, and I rocked. I'm wearing a red necklace, so break it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm in shades of burgundy today for some reason.
I love that.
It's a strong look.
Yeah, we all love burgundy, don't we?
We do.
Yeah. Burgundy's one of my favorite colors too. I kept the palette for this issue very kind of brick and burnt orange. And I love browns. And I know that some people don't love browns.
Mm.
And I'm trying to convert you all. I think the knitting world has been on a gray wave for at least 10 years.
It's the Grello thing. That's pretty strong still.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you know, people don't knit with... Yeah. Well, people don't knit with black much, do they?
No, because it's a...
It's difficult, and it's boring, and
right,
it's solid. Yeah. So the kind of next best thing, the closest neutral, is gray, right? And gray does come in fabulous, especially the hand-dyed yarns. It comes in fabulous variety of hand-dyed yarns. And that is exciting because, you know, you get all that chromatic neutrals, you know, different colors of gray.
Yeah.
But you can do the same. I see brown as in the same camp as gray. It's a neutral. But I call it like a warm neutral as opposed to a cool neutral, because to make the neutral of gray, you know, you're going towards a blue bias. Whereas if you're mixing with paint or dye the neutral of brown, you're using more of an orangey red bias. And although, you know, I love grays too, but I just think they're too prevalent. And I think it's exciting to kind of have another neutral to play with. Although I understand that for a lot of people, you know, it makes sense to kind of have a neutral and stick with it as the backbone of your wardrobe. Mine would be brown or camel or biscuit, not gray.
I like to have a camel at the back of my wardrobe.
Yeah.
And a biscuit.
Maybe a camel eating a biscuit
in our wardrobe. Won't last long, but...
I think you might have converted me, because I was not a brown... Well, it's not like I believe in all the colours.
Yeah, so do I.
So I didn't, like, hate brown, but it's not something... Actually, you know what, though? I remember when The Uncommon Thread started coming into Loop when we first started working there. She had a few
beautiful
browns, like toast or, like, grey browns.
Praline? Did she have praline colour?
That was a kind of golden
really
brown.
Really beautiful. Yeah, and toast. That's right. So she has some beautiful, beautiful browns. But think about how browns look as well with colours like all the purples, you know, I think that's a really gorgeous, rich look, that purple and brown, and even purple browns and deep navies and indigos. And of course, browns with reds and oranges. And then I think it can be playful with peaches. So I think...
Playful with peaches?
You know, when it goes to eat the biscuit in its wardrobe, it can play with some peaches.
It reminds me, you know, there's that Adam and Joe where they have the birthday parties and there's somebody whose parents threw them a brown party where all the food was brown and healthy.
Oh, yeah, because they're
somebody
like
really, who hated like, their children.
They were like really 70s throwback
hippies. Well, I think that's one of the reasons why brown is not in fashion, is still a reaction to the prevalence of brown and orange, burnt orange, as a palette for the 70s. But we're seeing so much revived from the 70s, rattan, all the kind of indoor plants, macrame, that whole thing. And I think with that is coming up, you know, is coming to brown. So I'm just saying, you know, give brown another look. Perhaps, like, I think all of us in this room, actually, brown is a better neutral color for us. Lydia has gorgeous chocolate-colored eyes. And Sophie also has brown eyes and has lovely kind of chestnutty hair. So I think all of us probably would suit brown as a neutral more than grey as a neutral.
I mean, this is why we asked you to be guest editor. Not only because of your endless flattery of us, but...
Yeah, that's true. I do that a lot.
Many deep and varied hues of colours. Knowledge.
I just yesterday, I don't know if this is relevant, but I saw the Helle Jorgens exhibition at the Design Museum, all about color.
Oh, yeah, I really want to see that.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Really interesting.
Oh, I should go.
Yeah, I really recommend. I think it's on for another month. And she has constructed the exhibition around morning, noon, and night, and the associated colors with those time of day.
Nice.
She's an industrial designer, but she's interested in, and this was very interesting, that in industrial design, there's just one black, carbon black. That's the most economical and stable black to produce, right? Whereas if you're a painter, you don't usually use a black from a tube, you mix a black, right? You mix your deepest red and your deepest green together and you get all these rich blacks, and there's, you know, a whole spectrum, like I was saying about chromatic grays, you can have the same thing, you can have chromatic blacks. And she's saying, you know, the whole palette of all the everything around us would change so dramatically if we had those kind of chromatic blacks instead of just carbon black as our industrial product. And she's interested in the whole idea of less stable colors and allowing them to change with the age of the product and the time of day. And I just thought, and the whole exhibition is about looking at color in these different times of day and different lighting conditions. And it's really fascinating. It got me thinking a lot about how it applies to knitwear, actually, and textiles.
Yeah, because I remember some of the most interesting colors that I've seen in both hand dyed and just like even kind of dyed in the fleece or wool beforehand, or, you know, are the ones that are almost black. Like really dark greens, like really, really, like with the new John Arbin.
I was just thinking, there's a, what I thought was a black, and I thought, oh, that's a bit odd. And you look at it and it's blackberry and the halo of it is red.
Yeah.
And it's almost purpley, but like such deep red tones as well. It's incredible. It's so gorgeous.
I agree with you. I think that's really exciting. Like getting you know, a black that is heathered or has flecks in it of other colors, which you can do in yarn. It's super exciting. And of course, all the hand dyed yarns. Not very many dyers really do a range of blacks, do they? And I think that could be something that they could explore a bit more. I think Uncommon Thread does a beautiful black, doesn't she?
She does.
Like a kind of blackberry-ish black.
Yeah, she definitely, I'm not going to remember the name. There's a few people who do like really amazing, really deep purple, almost blacks. I guess.
And from a photographer's point of view, of course, and as a magazine, you know, we could commission a design in those yarns and it would look gorgeous in real life, but it's actually super difficult to then photograph it. And also from the dyer's point of view, if they're selling online, it's really hard to get those colors across on a computer screen. You need to see them. And I think ideally see them in a range of lighting conditions, which is where they come into, you know, play. Yeah,
maybe that's why.
Yeah, we don't have so much black in design.
Yeah.
I did choose the cover design.
Oh, yeah. Issue 22.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What's it?
Diasis. It has black.
Yeah, it is John Arbin's black.
Yes.
And the so-called white with it is not white at all. What was the name of that?
I think it's called Unpredictable.
Unpredictable.
That was one of the ones that Viola.
Yeah, Viola.
That's a blended color.
It's a beautiful color. But I do really like to have kind of a graphic, highly graphic kind of print or texture. You know, in this case, it's obviously not a print, but it looks like a kind of geometric.
Yeah.
And I like to play that off other areas of solid color. So that was, that was a perfect. When I saw that design, there was no question that was going in the magazine. Yeah. That was one of the most exciting designs to get.
So maybe we should talk a little bit more about some of the other designs as well, because obviously they're all your favourites, having commissioned them within
yes.
your guest editor position.
Yeah.
So what have you got plans for? We're on needles.
Well, Palmetto is on my needle at the moment. I'm almost finished the first sleeve, and then I'll have the second sleeve and the button band, which includes the steeking to do. And it's really fun to knit. I've knit it in the beautiful Dandelion yarns, which I just love working with. You guys are knitting it too,
yeah,
right?
So basically the whole of the Palm staff got Dandelion yarn at Palmfest. So
yeah, I haven't started mine yet, but
Megan's is well underway.
Yeah, Megan's like a making good
tasty
progress.
Grapefruit.
Yeah.
I feel like mine is very subdued color-wise compared to everyone else's.
But that's great.
So you're going
isn't
for
it?
Like a gray.
Mine's like the main color is, oh god, it's gray.
That's all right. But it's gray with colors.
It's gray with colors. So the stripy shoulder pad things and button bands are like kind of golden yellow and wine color. Mm.
So I mean, I think it'll be great when we've all done it and we can all put them on and show it on all of our different sized bodies and shapes and in all these different colors. I think it's going to be exciting. I can't wait for it.
Is there anything else?
I think after that, I think I will do overcheck because I've been dying to have like a huge, super warm, double wrapped cowl. And I love a double knit cowl because, of course, there's no wrong side.
Yeah.
You know, so... And this yarn is just so stunning.
This is Uncommon Thread, isn't
it? Uncommon Thread, yeah.
I've never done double knitting. Have you? I'm looking at Sophie. I know that Juju has.
Yeah, Juju's done everything.
No, I haven't done it.
I mean, the advantage of double knitting, one of the advantages of double knitting over ferrile or, you know, stranded, is you don't have the strands of yarn in the back because they get knitted on the second layer of the fabric, you know, into a second layer of fabric. Mm-hmm. So the whole thing is stretchy, right? So the whole thing has the elasticity of just regular stocking knit stitch.
Ooh.
And obviously you have both sides are knitted, so there's no wrong side. So when you would make this cowl and then wear it as a Mobius or, you know, twist it around your neck, there's no wrong side. But it has a wonderful, and it's very hard to make sort of tension mistakes, or you won't have that problem that can arise with, say, intarsia or stranded knitting where there's gaps in the float because they're all woven in. So you won't have that. So in many ways, once you've got the kind of hang of it, it's very straightforward. And, you know, in a geometric pattern like this, it's very easy to know where you won't kind of have trouble knowing where you're at.
And just for people who for some reason haven't looked at this online, what we're describing is a big kind of cowl that's two-sided and has like a very graphic check pattern,
which is inspired by a sort of traditional woven pattern.
It's very nice. How about you, Soph?
I'm also planning Palmetto. As we said, I have the yarn which I got from Palmfest.
What color are yours?
So mine is part of the year. I've got like the same colors that are used in the sample in the magazine, so the pink and the sort of dirty gold for the stripes. But the main color I've got is like a warm sorbet raspberry color, which I'm very kind of like a clotted kind of raspberry color. So I'm excited about that. It's like the warmth of that. I think for autumn that'll be nice. I've also got my eye on an Ellie Belinda, but
me too.
That's as much as I've got my eye on it. I was like, yes, I will knit you.
So I also have my eye on this, and I am having yarn dilemmas.
This being
Ellie Belinda.
Oh, right.
Which is I think we talked about it a little bit. It's kind of like a boxy jumper with the cable bit of the
really
main
lovely
trunk part of your jumper.
And then it's got a nice little detail on the sleeves, like the same pattern echoed again. But yeah, boxy, kind of easy to wear. And it's knit in a 4-ply.
All right, so you have wool woes.
Slightly. I have wool woes. And I'm going to ask, what would Juju do about what yarn
to use?
I was
just thinking, I think that would be really nice in like kind of a natural coloured wool, like a cream naturally coloured.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking maybe Spindrift.
That's what I'm thinking. Something quite that references kind of Guernseys, you know?
Yeah, because I think the problem, I've done a few swatches of various different yarns, and that particular texture pattern can get lost quite easily because it's not a strong cable.
No.
It's just like little kind of one stitch cables, basically, like little traveling stitches. It kind of gets lost if the yarns that I've tried that have any kind of ply that's sort of visible, it just and they're gorgeous yarns, but it's just not the right combo. So then I was thinking, what is going to work, but because I still want that kind of woolly wool effect.
Yes.
Because I know that something like a kind of superwash merino would
do
stitch definition,
that.
But it wouldn't suit the feel of the jumper.
So we've got, for this, the orange version is the Shillister.
Ooh, the best yarn.
We love Shillister. And it wouldn't it have looked lovely in a fleece cloud Shillister, which is their natural colored Shillister. Yeah. It just, that would kind of be so... Maybe we can scrounge up some from collectors.
I've got the double knit, but I don't have the full knit.
Yes.
And then the brown version is a little grey sheet.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Really lovely. But yeah, so maybe some kind of spindrift.
Or maybe a little grey sheep in just one of their paler colours.
Mm. Yeah, to like really...
Spindrift would be nice.
Like a pure Shetland yarn, so it's woolly, right?
Woolly, yeah. Yeah, but I would wear that probably with an undershirt underneath of it most of the time.
Yeah, I'm pretty immune. I'm quite lucky. I'm quite immune to the scratchy wool.
Yeah, I don't mind either. I could wear it with just, you know, with just a tank top underneath it.
Wouldn't even bother with that. Just
Yeah. I mean, I want to make the cover star.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
Oh, we should definitely make a reference. Oh, we both thought at the same time. Good. We should make a reference to this amazing widget that's on... Alice's website, who designed the cardi.
Mm-hmm.
What's the website, Lou?
It is knitburo. So knitburo.com, and it's /patterns/diocese. But we'll put the link on the show notes for the peoples. Basically, you can select different colours for different colours. You can change the colours and have a look and try them out on this little widget.
There's a picture, like a schematic of a jumper, and you say like, well, I like the black, but maybe our background color I'll have as a mustard, or Lydia's now playing on it, and we've got a what's that, like a black band at the bottom, or
no, it's kind of a teal. I'm going to change that top bit to a pink. Ooh. No, that's red. No, not that.
This is what you're actually thinking of, isn't it? Is a gold and burgundy.
Well, I liked the idea of doing the, so in the, like we were saying, there's black and the kind of pale, unpredictable colour, which isn't white, but kind of is. It's a high contrast. I was thinking it would be cool to maybe do something with, like, the two main colours being, I don't know, like, burgundy and pink, or burgundy and yellow, or, like, orange and pink. I don't know, I wanted it to be almost, you know, like when you look at something and it makes your eyes hurt.
Ooh, that's pretty. Sorry, I'm just watching Lydia play.
So, if you wonder what we're actually doing when we're recording this podcast, this is what we were doing. Oh, that does make my eyes hurt. That's good.
I like that. But she's going for very different colours than it's shown in, and it's quite... This is a great widget.
That looks like fruit salad now, so...
Yeah.
Looks like what salad?
Fruit salad. Like the sweets.
That's okay. Yeah. Fruit salad's nice. Okay. I like fruit salad.
Anyway, so we highly recommend if you want to, even if you don't...
Yeah, just play on this.
Just play with that,
it's just colour really combos.
All colour work patterns should come
they
with this
should,
widget.
Shouldn't they?
I can do this. I have the technical abilities.
Cool, man. Yeah, so I want to make all the things. Can I make them all?
Yes.
Can I have a sabbatical to make the wall?
Sure.
I would make more things too. I probably will over time.
Yeah.
Make everything.
Make everything.
Yeah.
Right?
I want to make Nancy Marchant's scarf as well, Orbison, because I haven't done, first of all, because it's gorgeous. And again, you've got that kind of almost double-sided. It's not the same as doing double knitting.
That's right.
The tuck stitches, you get a kind of interesting fabric that looks different on both sides and where neither side really looks like a right or wrong side. And it's not something I've done lots of, so I'd be really intrigued to have a go on it.
The thing I like about this sample is that it's shorter than most scarves I'd probably knit, but it's so warm with like the shibui mohair that's in it.
That's right. It's also, she's combining different yarns together, you know, holding more than one yarn at a time. So I think the fabric would change radically depending on how you approached that, which is always interesting and probably good for people like me who have lots of odd colours in their stashes, who want to sort of, you know, figure out a way to play with them and use them.
That's a good point. It would be a really good stash.
It would be a good one. Yeah, because you could even do the yellowy bits at either end could be two separate colours, for instance.
I was just going to say that,
and that would be quite interesting,
I think. If you had enough, because there's a sort of yellow, it's all running through the whole lot, but in the middle to tie it together, you could have just one, like the blue would
work
into both ends, or just completely different ends.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah, I chose this because I just thought it was exciting to have all these different kinds of subtle textures playing off each other. And I do like a stash buster.
Gotta bust that stash.
So copies of issue 22 are now around the world at stockists and in letterboxes. If you haven't got yours, you can get it on the online shop. The digital version is also live, which is exciting.
Hooray!
So if you have technology, pop it on there. And also in other POM world news, we're doing a wool journey knit along You can find more information on that about that on the Ravelry group, which is called Pom Pom. Two reviews, and I am holding in my hands some mohair from Woolen Flower, who were at Pomfest.
They were. That's where I bought this yarn from.
Exactly.
So I'm knitting with them.
And they're also our sponsors for this episode. So thank you to Woolen Flower. So we touched a thing. The thing is plant dyed, yes?
Yes. So Woolen Flower, if you've listened to our sponsor message, which of course you have, you're listening to this podcast. She specializes in plant dyed yarns, and this is her plant dyed lace weight kid silk. So we've got a lovely mix of mohair silk. When I was saying to Juju earlier, you're like, what have we got? What, 70-30? Yeah.
Well, they're almost all 70-30.
I know, but you were just like, yeah, you didn't even have to look at it. You're like, oh, yeah. It's probably that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there
and
we
she
go.
She was right, yeah.
And the colour we've got here is dye with indigo and cochineal.
It's beautiful colour.
You get,
really
like,
beautiful.
An intense electric-y blue, but there's also that warmth of the pinky red.
It looks great with Lydia's t-shirt.
Oh, it does.
Which is sort of like an aubergine brown,
yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah, that's true.
See,
actually, that is
see what I'm saying about lilac and purples and browns?
Love it.
Yeah.
Maybe we should try and get some kind of picture of this for the anyway.
Yeah.
So what is this?
What are you making?
Yeah, what do you make?
So I'm doing sort of like a mohair loop on the bias, which I've discovered is really easy to knit on the bias. So I'm just decreasing one and increasing one at the other end. Mm-hmm. I've got a little provisional cast on. Kind of just making it up off the fly. I just wanted a big mohair tube.
Gotcha.
So that's what I'm going to make.
Yeah, you don't really need anything more complicated than that for a beautiful mohair yarn.
It does the
talking, and you'll get a lot of use out of something like that.
Yeah, because this kind of colour will go with many things, including what I'm wearing right now.
But well, of course, because you've knitted on quite large needles as well, it's quite lacy, so you can also sort of see things through it, which is then you can play
with that.
Oh,
changes the colour, of course, yeah. So it went for 6.5, if anyone's asking. I have to say about Jules' stall at Pomfest, because that, you know.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. She had great big swatches of dyed fabric hanging up in like big kind of strips, and then little bunches of flowers and plants and herbs and sort of things that she'd used to dye. Visually, I found it very appealing. And then I bought yarn. That was the story.
And also, so she did a kind of knitter's guide to Edinburgh?
Glasgow.
Mm-hmm. I know, I was going to say Glasgow, and then I was like, wait, second guess myself. No, she did a knitter's guide to Glasgow Forest because she lives and works there, and she works in a garden.
The botanical gardens. Yeah,
and so she grows a lot of the dyes that she uses herself. Mm-hmm.
Someone who's very like involved in the process, I think.
Mm.
We also had a little mini interview with her. If you go back in the archives of when we were at Edinburgh the first time, we have some mini interviews talking to her about her life and what she does. And yeah, she's one of those people, as many of these knitters and dyers are, who's just switched on and engaged and has such a passion and joy for what she's making. And, you know, I'm very pleased that I have a little bit of her mohair.
Yes, so, I'm pleased to be holding it.
Yes.
I wish you were making it for me.
It wasn't a big hint, was it?
But we have some kind of exciting way for people to get their hands on this yarn,
yes? We do, yes. I mean, after talking about all that and how happy we are, you could be happy too. We have a little competition on the blog, so head to pompommag.com and you'll find the podcast section there on the blog. And we have two skeins from Jules of this colour that we've all been raving about.
You can be like Sophie.
Be cool as me.
Just be like Sophie.
Yeah, have a little look on there.
I'm just looking a little closer
at
this yarn, and it gets better.
Because there's little flecks
of
cochineal in it. I do.
Flecks of the cochineal.
How many metres are there on that?
There are 420.
Yeah.
50
so
grams.
It was a 50 gram ball.
Yeah.
So you can do a lot with that with mohair.
Yeah. You might even have enough left over for Lydia to have one too.
Mm-hmm. And also, Jules makes lovely pouches out of recycled tweed.
She is.
Fabric.
She is. She is a tweed.
Just as an aside.
Lovely, yeah.
Yeah.
So
We like her very much.
Yep. Her details can be found at woolenflower.com. That's woolen, two O's, two L's. Flower, one L, one O.
You've lost me on the spelling.
woolenflower.com.
Okay.
But we'll put a link on the website.
Yeah, that's
so
easier.
Much easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know you're our interviewee for this podcast as well?
I do now.
Yeah.
We have already interviewed you, as previously said. You were our first ever interviewee, and you were excellent, as you always are. So we're not going to necessarily do so much of the, like, when did you start knitting?
Who are you?
Chit-chat.
What are you doing here?
Why are you here? We thought we could talk to you more about the issue 22 mm-hmm. inspiration, which we already talked about. There was a lot of pattern and a lot of kind of browns.
Mm-hmm.
But also I wanted to talk about the handmade wardrobe and the sewing elements that you brought in.
Uh-huh.
And just kind of do a deep dive into Juju's
cool
issue.
Where
were you when you were asked to be guest? What did you think?
I was probably in bed, where I usually am.
Cool man.
I thought, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, that's
good.
It.
And there is the interview. There you go. The end.
Yes. So, okay. We've already talked quite a lot about some of the patterns. But I remember, so there's also various articles, of course, mm-hmm. in that issue of the magazine, including a Merchant and Mills mm-hmm. one from when we went to visit them.
We had
them.
Fun, didn't we?
We did have the fun.
I think we wish we'd had even longer there, even though I think we got there for 12 o'clock or something, but
we were there for quite a while.
Feels like we could have stayed a few more days in Rye, this is, because not only did we have a really fascinating conversation with Caroline, the owner of Merchant and Mills, and
who are haberdashery fabric pattern people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
We had a good peruse of her shop.
We did.
And a nice little, a quickie in an antique shop or two. We could have spent a lot more time.
It was lovely. And I think, well, Sophie hasn't heard the end of this, but basically,
what?
I've finally taken up sewing.
Yay!
And it's more or less because Juju inspired me to.
That's great. That's my mission. My job here is done.
And now you have it in magazine form to inspire other people's.
Yeah, so if you don't know, I sewed most of the clothes, all the clothes in the issue 22, that the knits are styled with are all hand sewn, and I sewed most of them myself. I borrowed the occasional sample from Merchant and Mills and one from Ray Stitch, I think. But mostly I got on my machine a week or two before the shoot and zoom, 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 zoom. And because I really wanted to showcase the idea that not only are we knitters, but we are makers and we love the process of making. For me, that doesn't stop at knitting. And I think that's probably true of many of your mm-hmm. readers. You know, either they crochet or they sew, or they might quilt or embroider or draw or do something else. And
do carpentry.
Carpentry.
Any number
any
of,
kind
of things.
Yeah, dyeing. Yeah. Lots of people must be doing, mm-hmm. playing around with a bit of dyeing. And I think, you know, there's only so much of your wardrobe that you can knit, and mm-hmm. the rest of it you can sew, pretty much. So I personally have been sewing since I was probably about 13. I did study fashion design, and, you know, so I have a background in pattern drafting and sewing for industry as well. But I began making most of my own wardrobe when I was, you know, probably about 14, 15. And okay, I'm wearing store-bought jeans at the moment, but much of what I wear is handmade, and I really enjoy that.
Did you make that top?
No, I didn't make this top.
Oh, sorry. Oh, no,
But I bought this top thinking, oh, I love the shape on me, so I want to copy the shape, because I was looking for a top shape that I found flattering. And sometimes the easiest way to do that is to go to shops and just try on lots of clothes. So I do that, and then I don't buy things mostly, but occasionally this is a good quality silk top, and it was not bought from a cheapo high street shop. Mm. So it's not fast fashion, it's slightly slower fashion. So I didn't feel guilty. Not that I feel guilty, but I do steer away from fast fashion for the most part, and prefer to, as often as I can, make or pay for somebody who's handmade something.
And talking about the sewn things in this issue, I think a lot of people will feel like, great, I'll have a go at sewing. But if they haven't, where would you suggest as the starting points, or what do they need to think about? And, you know, equipment or project wise?
Yeah. There are, of course, tons of cheap sewing machines around now, and they're probably fine for just getting underway with your first project. Mm. They might, you know, as long as you're not using a very, very thick fabric, or something maybe very, very delicate, sort of in between. So all your kind of medium weight cottons and things like that are going to be fine on them. Lydia, I think you're using a fairly inexpensive sewing machine, aren't you?
Yeah, I just upgraded slightly, but it's still on the, you know, on the kind of mid-range sort of maximum.
I've had periods of my life where I've got by on a very poor quality machine before, and you can do it. Just change those needles after every item you sew.
That's a good tip.
Good advice.
Because that's true no matter what kind of quality your machine you're sewing on. But I think people don't realize how frequently, you know, the needle can just get blunted or just get a little fault in it, and they don't cost much. So just get that needle out and get another one in there. Mm. And it will improve your stitch quality.
Get that needle out.
Yeah, do that. And then, you know, if you have a local sewing shop that can teach you a basic class, I think that's a great idea. You did that, Lydia, didn't you?
I already, my level before pre-Juju coming in and inspiring me was that I had a sewing machine that I could thread and use to sew straight lines, but I'd never made anything massively successfully on it. So I did a class that was like make pajama bottoms, and then I did another one to make a skirt. And with those two, the things I got from it were like how to read a commercial sewing pattern, which I had no idea how to do.
Like knitting patterns. It's a unique language, and it helps to be inducted by a knowledgeable person into how to decipher them.
It's the sort of thing that you probably could figure out, but it's a bit less painful and a bit faster to just ask a question. Yeah. You know, just say, is this how I should do it?
I imagine now that everything is on the internet, so it's easy. I mean, I didn't have that when I was starting out sewing, so you can just look everything up. I tend to not even read the patterns, and I think that's probably common of people at my experience level. You know, you use the pattern as a, you know, you cut it out the way you cut it out. You know, you might make alterations as you cut it out, and then you just sew it from your own knowledge of sewing, because there's a logical construction method, just as there is with knitting. But I highly recommend that you choose one or two maybe very simple patterns, and you just repeat them many, many times in different fabrics, maybe with slightly different details, and build your confidence slowly, because I don't think you can make a very simple skirt or t-shirt in a lot of different fabrics, and it looks very different. Yeah. So, and it can be a backbone of your wardrobe. So, you know, for me, an A-line skirt is a flattering shape. You've made a dirndl skirt with a slightly gathered waist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's an item of clothing that you wear.
Oh, all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think most of us have something like that, be it a long-sleeved scoop neck t-shirt or whatever. Mm. And then just get comfortable with that one thing, and then, you know, build out from there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be complicated. There's so many garments you can make that don't need a zipper, for instance, that are just slip on over your head. A lot of us love to wear like a tunic-y dress, and that can really, you can find so many more interesting fabrics and do so many more interesting kind of details to it if you're making it yourself. Not to mention, you can make it fit better, because commercial clothing is made in to specific bodies, and if you are not exactly one of those specific bodies, well, too bad.
So one of the other things the magazine, well, with the handmade wardrobe and the knits, we also have the fabrics, of course. And there's an article with Amelia Jensen and her printed fabrics. Could you maybe talk a bit more about like your interest in those and how that started?
Yeah, well, I chose Amelia for designing what we specifically commissioned her to design a knitwear pattern, even though she didn't have any knitted pattern designs up on Ravelry when we commissioned her. I'd seen a lot of the things that she'd been knitting for herself, and the printed fabric she'd been printing for herself on Instagram. I mentioned this in an article I wrote about her in the magazine.
Yeah, so this is Palmetto, the dress that's styled with Palmetto.
That's
her fabric.
That's right, yeah. So it's a digitally printed silk fabric. And I asked her when we commissioned the sweater if she would make me a fabric to go with it that I could sew a garment from. And although she does a lot of screen printing, she offered me this fabric, which she had digitally printed from one of her designs, which is, you know, it could, it's very simple shape, so it has akin to a screen printed fabric, but it allows her to work with a base that isn't white, so it's kind of all blues and greens and oranges.
80s Aztec, is what I call it.
Aztec?
80s Aztec.
80s Aztec, yeah. That's probably a pretty good description. And a lovely, lovely silk fabric. Really easy to sew with. And I made a Style Arc, was the sewing company who provided the pattern for that. And I did alter the pattern slightly because I was expecting to have a model that was larger than the one we actually ended up getting. And she was going to be having a larger boot, shall we say. So it is slightly oversized on this model, but it's a great dress. Like it's got great pockets in it, which you can't necessarily see so well in the magazine because I very carefully matched the pattern across the pockets.
Ooh.
Yes, that's
something that I haven't tried yet and scares me.
That magic stuff that I showed you, the fusing tape, is your best friend for that.
The matching things. Yeah. But it's when you're cutting it out that it confuses me.
Oh, yeah. Transparent tissue paper is what you use. So, yeah,
we'll talk about it.
Yeah. There's magic, there's trick. Just as there is with knitting, there's a whole series of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you don't have to match the pattern across there.
Yeah.
I might not have, if the dress were for somebody like you, Lydia, that's very petite, I might not have worried so much about it. But as I was making this dress for a larger woman with large hips, I didn't want there to be like a contrast in the hip area, right? Which is what would have happened if the pattern had been mismatched over the hips. Your eye would be drawn to the mismatch of the pattern there. And that maybe isn't what somebody who's larger might want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, if it were somewhere, like if the pocket were somewhere, no, that doesn't make sense. I was going to say, if the pocket were at the neckline, was a collar or something, I might allow the pattern to be mismatched there because that would be an area where you'd want to draw the eye to.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And then in the article that you wrote, there's like cool pictures of how Amelia does her designs and kind of examples, and then a little bit about digitally printing fabrics, which I know is something you've been experimenting with.
I have, yeah. I've just been, I will be making, Amelia inspired me, because it's something I've been thinking about for years. There's tons and tons of places that will digitally print your fabric from your designs now, and they will print as little as a meter, and the prices are really reasonable. So I was like, this is what I've got to be doing, because my one holdback with sewing is that I can never find the kind of amazing prints that I really, really want. So I have started playing around with designing, and then I've been sending off my designs to various companies, and they will make up just like a little A4 letter paper sized sample for you to see how it comes out. And I'm comparing different fabrics with different processes of designing and color palettes and so on. And yeah, if you follow my blog sometime this autumn, I'm sure I'll be posting things there'll be pictures of what I've done.
Very exciting.
It is exciting. It's just like another way in which we can kind of control our design. And they have, a lot of these companies do, you can design a print and then they'll send you a made up like bathing suit or t-shirt or pair of leggings already made in it.
Wow.
I know. I mean, and they will also, it's fantastic. You know, they will also, so you do your design, you know, and then download it onto their website and they'll show it on a bathing suit on a model. And I mean, I don't have that model's body, so that's like, I don't know how they can ship that to me, but but it's like, it's amazing. You guys would love it.
I know, we're kind of like stunned into silence about the possibilities now. We're both like thinking about it.
So. Yeah, no, you guys were, I'm sure it's how all these people, did you see that Trump bathing suit where somebody took Trump's face and they put it on their bathing suit and they allowed kind of the woman's body to distort the shape of his face? I'm sure that's how that was done. It was so... I kind of wanted it. but they, you know, leggings, Lydia,
wardrobe staple. I heard Lydia just whisper leggings. Leggings?
Yeah.
Well, because I guess, the idea of being like, just the kind of beginning of learning to sew. I was like, this is so exciting because a lot of my wardrobe is like long skirts, basically. Long, brightly coloured skirts. And I'm kind of, I often buy things secondhand because... I like that. And you can get a lot of big long skirts that way as well. but then, you know, haven't always been able to find the fabrics that I like.
Yeah.
So now I can choose them. And then next step, design the fabric or dye the fabric, which is another thing I was thinking
about. Yeah, that's
right. Because in your editor's letter, you said that you feel most like yourself when you've made everything that you wear.
Yeah.
Which, and I was like, that is such a nice thing.
Because you're just like a walking canvas, aren't you, for your ideas and your perceptions of color. Obviously, it takes time.
Mm.
But there's nothing wrong with wearing the same thing all week. You know, I don't leave the house much.
Well, Anna Mott says that in her article, doesn't
she? Yeah, does she as well?
Like, more or less says, like, one of the things, she was saying she thinks one of the things about why people tend to wear neutrals is that because it's not as noticeable if you're wearing the same thing day after day. Whereas if you've got, like, a really bright pink skirt with, like, yellow polka dots and, you know, a bright blue jumper, then that's noticeable and people will know.
Yeah.
But people just need to be more chill about wearing the same thing. I wore this outfit yesterday.
Well, I often think of you, Lydia, in striped leggings. Striped you have leggings, some great sort of striped leggings and jeans and stuff like that. So I could see you kind of printing some leggings that had maybe some interesting kind of stripe happening and things like that. Many exciting Lydia possibilities. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send you a picture of one of the bathing suits that I've designed for the for the website. Would you like that?
Yeah, definitely.
And you can see sort of like, you know, what it would look like. It is my body in the picture, by the way. For the listener at home, I
make some custom bathing suits now. That's brilliant.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
You could just wear bathing suits.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Big poofy skirts.
Yeah.
But you were saying, Sophie, that you maybe wanted to do a bit more sewing as well, just because I won't stop talking about it. You're just placating me. Yes, Lydia, like sewing.
I think it's funny because when you were like, I discovered sewing, and I kind of feel like, cool, because I like, it's a thing that's been in the background for me, which has kind of been replaced by knitting, which is not a bad thing. So I'm like, I do all the knitting now. I think it's the portability of knitting that's kind of taken over for me. I don't even like sew when it's like a special occasion where I'm like, right, I'd like a dress for this occasion.
Yeah.
And like the last big project I did was maybe like when I'd finished uni.
Yeah.
Because I had the time, you know.
I think a lot of people complain about sewing, how much sort of setup and knockdown it takes too. Mm. That if you're cutting something out, you need a big table, and that is all true. Whereas knitting is portable, works well in small spaces.
Yep.
You can talk and socialize as you do it.
It's a different sort of...
It's a very different activity.
But I've realized... So I live in an absolutely tiny flat, like, and it's shared. So it's not, you know, the small amount of space that I have in the living room isn't just my space even. And my housemates have been very, very nice about me taking over the living room. And I've just had to get into a routine of... It's quite a small dinner table. You know, I'm just using the space that I've got. And it isn't perfect.
No.
You know, I have to keep, every time I finish sewing, I have to put everything away, put the ironing board away, put the iron, you know. But, I mean, it really, I can see that it's annoying. But it really takes 5 minutes at the beginning and end.
Exactly.
And I know that it is a bit like, oh, you know, get all the stuff back out.
Yeah.
But I think if that feels like an obstacle, it's worth just kind of plowing through it because...
You're not going to sit down for sort of 5 minutes of sewing. You are, you know, you're going to have like an hour to 2 hour long session.
Sure.
And actually, that's enough probably because you don't want to get neck and back ache and stuff like that. So I think, you know, it's something that you just sort of set aside some time and you do it. And then you have your knitting.
Of course.
And that's your portable project.
And there we go. Let's go make something, shall we? What Juju do? That's what we ask, and what Juju would do would come and host a podcast with us. So it seems rude not to ask you. What would Juju do with our crafting queries?
Okay.
I think Lydia had one.
So since this is a more sewing themed episode, I have a what would Juju do question about top stitching, which I recently learned is you see it on jeans a lot. That's probably the place people are most familiar with it, like a kind of contrast thread maybe around the pockets and so on. So I'm making a skirt called the Brumby Skirt by Megan Nielsen, which I like very much, and it involves top stitching. And I managed to successfully do some of the top stitching, you know, and then I re-threaded the machine with the regular thread, did a bunch of other stuff, coming back to the top stitching, and the tension is out of whack, man. And I don't know what's gone wrong.
Mm.
What would Juju do?
I've had trouble with some top stitching threads as well before. you have kept that now. I know that when we were talking earlier about sewing, you hadn't really got a lot of off scraps next to your sewing machine. So you need to always have lots of, when you cut out your garment, you need to save all the off scraps bits so that you can seam them and then double seam them and then top stitch them, because the different layers of thickness of fabric are going to create different surfaces that need different kinds of tensioning and so on.
Yes.
If you had tension that before that was working and you don't now, then you need to check your needle is your first first thing. You may need to replace the needle. And then you want to see whether it's the bottom thread or the top thread that need to be changed by which one's creating the loose thread. If you need to, you know how to adjust the tension of your needle
with your dial. Easy.
Your bobbin should sit inside its bobbin holder. Do you have a bobbin holder? Is it that kind of a machine where it comes in a little casing?
No.
Oh.
Or you just pop it on the top or something.
Yeah, the bobbin.
Oh, that's yeah, that's different then. I can't explain.
Oh
that.
No!
Yeah,
look at that. It's when you put it in the casing and then you feed it through, and it should, if you hold the thread from the bobbin, it should sit in the casing.
That's right. And you should be able to go boop boop, and it should just drop down slowly. But it's not likely. I would say the needle.
Check
the needle first.
Okay. I'll do that. And also actually thinking about it is it's the top stitching around the zip. So I guess there's an extra layer of fabric.
That's
there.
What it is. And your cheaper machine as well will have more difficulty with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where you'll start to see the difference in quality of a machine. And if you want to come around to my house and top stitch that, you can.
Maybe I will.
Do you have any what would you do questions?
I had a knitting question.
Very good.
So I was knitting a cardigan and I've knitted the front and the back, and although I checked my measurements, it's kind of stretched out, I think, because it's a seamed piece. This is Tania, which is from issue 20, which I finished. And I think I know the answer, but I'm just going to go through the process to see what would Juju do.
Okay.
So the front and back are knitted, and I'm going to seam it all together. And it seems that it could be a little bit too long in the length.
Ah.
But because I've knit it bottom up, I don't feel there's like an elegant way to then alter that length. I'd have to sort of undo it, and undoing from the cast on, I feel that's a bit kind of clunky, and then I feel like maybe I need to cut it if I'm going to adjust it. But then I also feel like I need to sew the entire thing, block it, and then let it just sort of be a cardigan to really know
if it's too
what
long.
I'm going to do.
Is there ribbing at the bottom?
Yes.
So you could, in theory, cut the ribbing off and remove a few, or, you know, cut above the ribbing to the length you want and then pick up and knit down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be what you want to do. The stitches won't match exactly
when you're
going.
When
you're going in the opposite direction. So you'll need to start the new knitting from the top of where the ribbing goes down. Mm-hmm. And the only way to do that is to cut it off and do that way. Yeah, I would be tempted to sew it together apart from the ribbing.
Right.
So just leave the ribbing on.
Little sexy slits at the side.
Yeah, exactly. And try it on. And block it and try it on. And then see what you think. But not sew up the ribbing, because, you know, then you can quickly and easily remove what you need to and knit to the length you want.
Because then I was thinking there's no reason I couldn't just do the ribbing sort of not in the round, but all in one.
Yeah, exactly.
From the fronts and the
back.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be the logical way to do it.
Could you chop off the ribbing and then graft it further up? I mean, that's a bit more of a...
I was thinking of that, but I don't know. It feels like that's more faff than
and
just
I think
knitting
it might
a couple
be more
of
seamless. Sorry?
It would be like, I mean, I guess, but who's going
to
notice?
I don't think it would be more seamless, because I think the grafting is more likely to be an obvious change.
Yeah.
Because you're already probably changing needle sizes. So it's better to just, it's easy to pick up and knit in the opposite direction. And the ribbing isn't going to, that's going to be fine. And you might even have changed stitch count slightly at the ribbing.
But
it won't matter.
It's a valid point.
Yeah. So that's the logical place to have a change.
Okay. That's what Juju would do.
And
that is now
what Sophie will do.
Live and interactive.
Is that what you were thinking you'd do?
Yeah. Well, of course.
Yeah.
That's exactly the plan. Okay. Well, we now have more information. So now we will go into the final section of the podcast, where we like to list things in threes, hierarchically, for your amusement.
Number one is the best thing?
Yes. Number one is the best.
Okay.
Even though three is one of my favourite numbers.
Okay.
Anyway, yes. So for this episode, with our craft guru here with us, we're going for a more technical bent, and we've decided to do top three crafting tools. And that can be interpreted in many ways. Doesn't have to be knitting. Could be knitting. Doesn't have to be of the textile craft variety, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite broad, but I think could be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So do we want Juju to go
first? I think we start with Juju, definitely.
Okay.
Ooh, so
it's quite tricky, isn't
it? It's tricky because you're saying it can be like for any of the things. Well, and I mean, do many different
that's
things.
That's true. I mean, maybe we should make it more specific. I don't know.
Textile things?
Okay, textile things. Because otherwise I'd have to say things like sketchbooks and pens. And,
sure.
You know what I mean?
Okay, and then we're getting into just general. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Textile crafts.
Okay.
Top three tools.
Okay. Top three tools. Can I preface this by saying I think it's good to have as few tools as possible?
Interesting.
Because especially with something as portable as knitting, the more tools you're reliant on, the more you're stuck with carrying junk around you don't need. So if I've got like a hairpin that can do as a cable needle, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I try to make double use of as many things as possible. I even prefer yarn that you can break rather than cut, you know, for that reason. So I just want to start with that.
Okay, very good. Right. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned this before, and it's knitting relevant. I mentioned this in a previous podcast. Mm. Scooby-Doos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those little lace, plastic lace things that are hollow on the inside, little tiny tubes that kids used to weave lanyards out of and are sold in packs of 50 and 100. I put them on my needle tips and pull them through my knitting for live stitches that I want to put onto a stitch holder, and they're easy then to slip on and off again. They're the best, right, guys?
They are. You've revolutionized my way I put stitches on hold.
I need more Scooby-Doos, actually.
I have two that you gave me that I hold on to preciously.
Okay. I will buy you, because my pound shop sells them. So my pound shop sells them, you know, by, I think they're 50 or 100 in a pack. So it's brilliant, right?
Yeah.
And I recommend buying 50 or 100 because, again, I do stuff them, like, literally, I put them under the sofas in the cushions in my sofa because, you know, nobody knows.
Yeah.
And then I always have one, right?
Yeah.
And they aren't going to, like, hurt you like a pin. And then I think I was showing Lydia in sewing. I'm really keen on the fusing tape.
So this is number two, yes,
right? Number two. Which is...
Yours is called Steamer Seam.
Steamer Seam, yeah. And it comes in different widths and so on. Both sides are fusible.
And so on.
And so, is that another...
No, I mean...
Oh,
I mean,
it's a pun.
She's making a sentient punning machine, so he's got...
I've been kind of quiet for a bit, so...
I think there may well be a brand called So On, too,
right,
so that's
sure,
why
yeah.
I thought you were, like, you know, you were plugging another sponsor.
Continue, please.
Yes. So, I use it for... you can even buy it in the corner shop for, like, people who can't sew to just hem their jeans.
Basic needs, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, where they sell all those
safety
little...
Safety pins and, like, little mini sewing sets.
And it's great stuff. And even that cheap stuff is fine, you know, that you can just use it to fuse your hems and things like that. But I always use it, and I was showing Lydia this, to fuse hems before I sew them, so that I get a nice, perfect hem without the distortion of pins. And it's really brilliant if you're sewing with knit fabric, jersey fabrics, because jersey fabric can buckle. There's other ways of dealing with that, with walking foots and so on. But brilliant for making your hems. And, you know, you don't even have to sew the hem. You can just leave it like that. Great stuff. So, and that would be what I would recommend as well for putting on pockets, all kinds of things in sewing.
Mm.
So it's a top tip thing. And then, you know, maybe all these things are equal. Maybe I don't really have a top three. Sorry, Ben. Sorry, again, because they're different things, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That I really like for sewing, again, I have one of those huge self-sealing mats and a rotary cutting tool.
Mm-hmm.
My huge mat is 6 foot long, so it's the whole size of my cutting table. So it just means I can lay my fabric on my cutting table and I can lay the
lay down
on it. I can lay the pattern pieces on it, and I use a rotary cutter. I fill up little old, I save like little tins of that mints and things like that came in, and I put all my old Canadian pennies, because you can't spend a Canadian penny anymore. This. Sorry. But I suppose you could do that with like francs and any out of circulation currency.
Yes.
fill your tins with those so that you make weights. And then instead of using pins, I weight my pattern and fabric to the table and then just use my rotary cutter to cut around things.
I've never
got
away with rotary cutters. I find them too unwieldy. I think I need to just probably practice a bit
more. You can also get like smaller diameter ones.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so you know, the typical one is 5 centimeters in diameter. But if you're kind of going around lots of small corners, you can get much smaller ones.
That was because I've used my mom's quilting one, which is just like a big old pizza cutter to do straight lines.
She might even have a bit. She might even have a bigger one because if you're a quilter, they come much, much bigger. Right. So for clothing sewing, I typically have the 5 centimeter one, and then probably it's like a 2 centimeter one, and I just go between them depending on what I'm cutting.
Like that's revolutionary for me. That's good.
I think once you kind of get used to them and kind of get round, and even if you can't afford the big 6-foot ceiling mat, you can get these other ones. You know, again, they sell them at my local pound shop that are, I don't know, a meter or something like that. And you can put them behind a piece of furniture. You could just stand them up behind like a bureau or something so they don't notice, you're not noticeable, and you can lay that on top of your kitchen table.
Yeah, I suppose for a bureau as well.
But you have a chest of drawers, right?
Right, yeah.
So what's behind your chest of drawers?
Yeah,
so
secrets.
Secrets. Okay. Next to your secrets and your biscuits.
Your camel.
Yeah, where your blocking mats are. Same place. That's where they can live.
I was just being facetious.
I know. So those are mine.
Very good.
It's all good. Sophie.
Number three is a newly acquired tool that I have, which is my pom-pom gauge ruler. Which is like a set square thing with a hole in the middle. I'm not a big fan of doing gauge swatches, but this, because I have this, I know you're saying about not having too many things, but having this little piece of wood with a little pom-fest sprinkles that we did, which are all the Stitch Fetti, which is all on the logos and stuff.
Happy reminders.
Yeah, it kind of, I have this thing that's more of an impetus to make it an event to make a swatch and to use this gauge ruler thing, and it's made by some nice people called Katrinkles, made for us in the USA.
Katrinkles.
It's a funny word.
That's great. I love that word.
So I think that's,
it's like what the kind of pee that Katrina does.
Is that diaper?
I do a soap sprinkle.
I do shoo-shoo inkles.
Juju whiz. Juju whiz.
Do I?
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, I don't... Oh boy. So now I like measuring gauge. The end. Number two, I'd probably have to go with the Scooby as well. Like I say, Scooby. I have these two that you've given me. One of them is cut in half, which is like preciously used for like thumbs on mittens and things like that. And then I have a big one, which is for jumpers.
I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
Oh boy, I can't wait. It's my birthday next month. Come on.
Yeah, it'll be before your birthday, don't worry.
Oh yes.
Okay, so yeah, we've heard all about those. We love them. Plastic tubes for the win. Number one, I'd have to say a pair of sharp scissors. I find no greater joy than having a good, accurate pair of scissors. And I was recently sorting out my craft stuff. I have 7 pairs of scissors, and I laid them all out. I was like, no, I need each one of these for a different kind of job, and I love them all equally.
Yeah.
And then they went back in the drawer. So I have some very, very tiny ones, which are like a centimetre high blade. Got some folding ones. Got 2 very sharp ones, which are both aesthetic in different ways, so I like them differently. One of them looks like a cockerel. The other one is like...
A cockerel?
Yeah, it's kind of like a weird thing. And then like big ones for paper, ones for...
Yeah, you can never have enough scissors.
Yeah.
So what I said earlier about not having anything, that didn't include all the things that I have.
So there we go.
That's good.
Yeah. Very good.
I like it. Okay. I'm going to go with a number three, an iron that has a really good steam function.
Yeah.
Because, maybe that should be number one. Too late. It's number three. Because it's not really like, it's a tool, but it's different to the kind of like itty bitty travel-y tools.
Yeah,
but
it's a tool.
I have found that in all the textile-based crafts I've done, steam makes so much difference.
Yeah.
And it's kind of impossible to do any of the textile crafty things without at least some kind of, even if you're not like mega blocking things, steaming them and it, while you're...
This is coming from a girl who, when I first got to know you, you were anti-ironing.
Or I just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Which I was like, what do you mean you can't do it?
Well, I've never really done it because I never ironed any of my clothes. Because I was like, why would
you're
you
a changed
clothes?
Woman. You used to hate purple and not iron.
Hey, man, I'm a grown-up now.
Yeah, you are. That's what it is. She turned 30.
But also, I think before I learned to... I always got the steam thing for knits. But actually ironing until I recently learned to sew. I don't know if I mentioned that.
You need an iron for sewing. Yeah.
And so now I'm like, oh, I get it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, really into irons at the moment. Really into my steam iron. Also makes a really satisfying noise.
Oh yeah, that's a great noise. Yeah.
Anyway, so that. And then next I have, next two are quite similar. Number two, I have darning needle. /blunt needle for all that's the
good.
Things.
Good one.
Well, but you need one too.
I know, but I guess maybe sharp ones I have taken for granted. Whereas darning needles,
you need a sharp darning needle too.
Oh, yes.
Because when you're sewing in slippery threads, it's useful to use the sharp one to pierce the thread as you go back in on itself. Whereas then you need the blunt one if you're doing Kitchener stitch or something.
Exactly.
You need both.
So darning needles of the sharp and unsharp variety, because they're just useful for everything, not only for finishing, you know, weaving ends and things, but for actually fixing stuff. They're great. And I can never have too many of them because I'm constantly losing them. Mm-hmm. They're like pens and socks. They just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, crochet hook. Uh-huh. For similar kinds of reasons, for picking up stitches, because I make a lot of mistakes while I'm making things. Because, for example, I could be watching TV, not paying full attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I find crochet hooks to be the optimum way to pick up stitches in that way. And all sorts of funny, like, knitting things that have gone wrong. I think crochet hooks just, I don't know, what else do I even do with them? I don't know. Sometimes. I feel like in my backpack, I have a crochet hook and a darning needle. Mm-hmm. And that's my, like, to-go set. Because I think I don't need a cable needle. Stitch markers I can improvise on, but if I need to like fix something while I'm out because I've made a mistake, one of those two things will do it for me.
I'm not a fan of buying stitch markers.
I like the rubber ones. I find them very satisfying to work with, but I mostly these days use little bits of yarn.
Me too, yarn.
I like the locking ones. If I looked at me suddenly then,
I like the locking stitch marker for crochet actually. Otherwise, if you're traveling around while you're crocheting, sometimes the crochet needle falls out of the stitch.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
so
good point.
That's a good locking stitch mark.
Good point. Well made.
I feel like we've covered a lot of tips in this.
Yeah.
So, very good.
It's been info
actually the heavy. One thing that I did want to put above number one.
Okay.
Is podcasts.
Oh,
hooray! Don't you think?
It's like meta.
Yeah, it's true, but crafting with podcasts is wonderful.
There we go. Well, we hope you've been crafting with podcasts.
Because if you haven't...
So thank you to Juju for being guest editor and guest host for this episode.
Delightful.
We'll have some fun pictures on the blog, so you can check that out. Check out the Woolen Flower competition as well.
Yeah, we'll have all sorts of links to the fun widget and to the patterns we talked about. Sewing things we've talked about, and
to Juju
herself, and to a few sewing, sort of the sewing websites that are a bit like Ravelry that we were going to sort of direct people towards.
Mm-hmm. And the amazing bathing suit.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah. Can't wait. So, yeah.
We'll see you again next month.
Bye!
Bye! Bye. Podcast is produced by Lydia Gluck and Sophie Scott, with lots of help from Eli Block, who created the original music for the show.
Thanks as always to Megan Fernandez, co-creator and editor of Pom Pom Quarterly. And thanks also to the lovely Amy and Gail. Thanks, of course, to Juju Vale for being our guest host.
Yay!
That's you! So thanks to Juju and our sponsors, Woolen Flower. And of course, a big thank you to all you Pom Pom buyers, subscribers and listeners. You can buy your copy of the magazine and subscribe too at our online shop, which is pompommag.com/shop.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and why not leave a review? Send any feedback or ideas to podcast@pompommag.com. And don't forget to keep in touch with us via the podcast group on the Pom Pom Ravelry Forum.